Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is B'Metzia Daf Samech Ches. We are holding on Daf Samech Zayin Amud Beis. We're 8 lines from the bottom of the page. Amar Ezil Va'Aisi Zuzi, right at the beginning of the line. Today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children, and Lila Nishmas, his mother, Golda Basimcha, Aleha Shalom, Shem Shav and Aliyah, and also by Daniel Sadian for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Hatzlacha for our soldiers and our captives. And it's also sponsored by my aunt and uncle, by Jeanette and Jack Blumenkopf, Lezecher Nishmas, our Zaydi Sender on his yard site, Sender Ben Yaakov, his neshama should have an Aliyah. We thank all the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So what we're going to discuss today is the following. First, we're going to discuss whether the Malva is allowed to keep eating, but we've been discussing a field that's given as a mashkon. So the first, until we get to the Mishnah, that's what we're going to continue to talk about. When a field is given as a mashkon, so what are you allowed to eat from that field? So first, we're going to talk about if the Malva is allowed to keep eating when the Lova says, you know what, I'm getting the money together. Soon I'm going to bring you the money. So once he makes that commitment to bring the money, is the Malva allowed to continue to eat from the field? Then the Gemara is going to explain the practices of different Amorayim, whether they would or wouldn't eat from a field that was given to them as a mashkon. And then we're going to have two teachings of Ravashi about a mashkon. And then the Gemara is going to bring up three different questionable business practices, but the last one involves a field that's used as a mashkon. So that's why we bring up all three of these practices, because they were all brought up by the same person, and the last one involves our topic. And then the Mishnah on the bottom of Amud Aleph is going to shift the discussion entirely. We're going to bring up a new topic, and that is the topic of Iska, that we're going to discuss a case where a person gives someone money or produce to invest, and the deal is that half of it is yours and half of it is mine, meaning half of the losses and the gains are going to be on the person who's doing the work, and half of the losses and the gains are going to be the person who provided the actual capital, who provided the money. So the commission is going to explain what the problem with such an arrangement is, and why such an arrangement can look like ribbis. Then the Gemara is going to discuss the way to avoid that, to avoid it looking like ribbis, is by also paying the guy some sort of salary. So even the part that you're going to get that the person who's providing the capital is going to get the benefit from, it's not just pure benefit on behalf as payment for lending the guy money. That would look like ribbis. I'm also paying you a salary to invest my money for me. So the Gemara is going to discuss what that salary looks like, to pay him schar, kipol batel. What does that mean? How much does it have to be? Could it be a minuscule amount? And then the Gemara is going to have four different brisos, which are each recorded machlokas tanaim, and all four go back to that issue, to how much you have to pay a guy, how much of a salary you have to pay a guy in order to avoid the ribbis related issues. So that's going to be the second half of the daf. So let's begin again, 8 lines from the end of the page on daf samach zayin amud beis. So we had just said that in certain places it's called an asra de misalki, that certain places when I give a guy a field as a mashkon, as soon as I come up with the money, I can throw him out of the field and say, give me my field back, because the field was a mashkon. So if I pay back the loan, I can take back my field whenever I want. That's called an asra de misalki. So in such a place where I have the right to do that, Amar, if the Lova said, Ezel va'isi zuzi, I'm going to go right now and bring the money. I already have all the money together. I'm going to go bring it. So stop eating the payros from the field, because I'm about to take that field back. Lo achil. The Malva has to stop eating the payros from that field even before the Lova actually brings the money, because since he said that he has all the money ready and he's just got to go and fetch it, he just has to go and bring it, so the Malva should stop eating the money, but it should stop eating the payros from the field. But if the Lova tells the Malva, look, I don't yet have all the money, but Ezel, the Etrach, the Aisizuzi, I'm now going to work really hard to collect the money and to bring it to you. Stop eating the payros right now, because it's atat, it's going to happen soon. So Ravina Amar Achil, Ravina says, nothing's happened, so the Malva can continue to eat from the payros of that field, because the Lova doesn't have the money. It's not in his pocket, it's not in his house, he doesn't have it anywhere, so it's not considered as if it's already paid up. But Marzuch, Rav Mari Amar, Lo. lo achil. Even at that point, the malva has to stop eating from the peiros, because since the lova's intention is to pay up the chov, he is hereby being misalik the malva from that property, from that karka, from that field, even though he hasn't yet actually paid it up. Vilchsa lo achil, and we actually paskin that way luchumra, that the malva is not allowed to eat it from the time the lova says that I intend to pay up the chov and to get my field back. So now the Gemara discusses what various holy Amoraim did when they were presented with a field as a mashkon. Rav Kahana... Is that my phone? Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, lo achli. Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, and Rav Ashi didn't eat a field that they were presented as a mashkon binach yasa, even if they were, even by deducting the from the amount of the loan, by deducting whatever they would eat from the amount of the loan, because they thought that that still looks a little bit too similar to ribbis. The Rif explains that they held that it's an iser gomor, and they disagree with Rava, who holds that the Mikra did its mutter, it's just that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't do that, right? That's what we had higher up on Samach Zayinam Beis, that Rava said that it's not an Isser Gomer, it's that Talmud Chachamim shouldn't be doing this. So they disagreed, they felt it was an Isser Gomer, but Tosa says, no, they didn't hold it was an Isser Gomer, they knew that Mikra did its mutter, but they held that they should hold themselves to a standard of a Talmud Chacham, and that's why they refrained from doing this. Ravina, Achul B'nach Yasa, Ravina would eat from the payrolls of the field that he received as a mashkon, and he would just deduct whatever he ate from the amount of the loan. So we would help the lova pay off the loan by him eating from this field. We said earlier on this amud in yesterday's shir that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't do this. So how could Ravina do this? So Tosus and Dibra Maskel Ravina writes, yeah, Ravina didn't hold himself to be a Talmud Chacham, so he didn't think that he had to live up to the standard of a Talmud Chacham, which is a little bit strange because Rashi explains that the reason that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't do this is because other people, the Amei Aretz, will learn from him. So even if you don't hold yourself like a Talmud Chacham, that's not what it should be tully on. It should be tully on whether Amei Aretz think you're a Talmud Chacham. So even if you think you're not a Talmud Chacham, but if Amei Aretz think they will, then think you are, then they're going to learn from you. In Tosfos quotes Rabbi Chananel that Ravina did not eat with a regular nachyasa, but rather was kitsusa, meaning what we discussed yesterday. He didn't just stam deduct whatever he ate from the amount of the loan. He had a set amount. He did kitsusa, and that was Ravina's shita, that even a Talmud Chacham is allowed to do kitsusa. So that's why it could be that he did hold himself to be a Talmud Chacham, and he was still allowed to eat from the field that he was given as a mashkon. So the Gemara explains what's behind each shita. So again, we have Rav Kahan, Rav Papa, and Rav Ashi that would not eat from a field that was given to them as a mashkon, and Ravina who would. So Marzutra, my time demand Achol Benach Yasa. What's the basis for Ravina? Midadahava Steyachuza. Very similar to what the Torah tells us about someone who's poda a Steyachuza. Steyachuza is a field that a person has as a Yerusha that goes Ben-Achaber all the way back to Yehoshua Ben-Nun, and it was made into Hagdish, so he's poded it from Hagdish, and then he can only be poded for the number of years up until Yovel for a set price, and then at Yovel it's going to go to Kohanim. So the person who's poded the Steyachuza pays Hagdish a sela and a pundion for each year for a particular size of karka. So and he gets to eat the peiros each year. So steyachuza lav afagav dekachol perituva, even though you could be eating lots and lots of peiros over the course of the year, still amar achmana, the Torah says kaparukla ba'arba azuze, you could be poded it for a sela for four zuz, and that's not considered mi'ila behegdish, even though you're paying a tiny amount of money for what could be lots and lots of peiros that you're eating from that hegdish field. And the reason that's okay is because you're paying for it in advance before you know how many peiros there's going to be. So you are taking some risk. It could be the whole field will be flooded and there won't be any peiros at all. So there's a risk of loss as well. And therefore, that's considered like a mechira. I'm buying the peiros of this field, whatever they may be. So it could be a good investment. It could be a bad investment. And that doesn't look like ribbis at all. That's not a problem. So over here also, when the malva receives the field as a mashkon from the lova, if he deducts a set amount from the chov for the achila of the peiros of each year, he says, okay, I'm going to eat for the next 5 years, and for each year that I eat, we're going to deduct $10,000 from the money that you owe me. Do I know that it's going to produce $10,000 of payrolls? It may produce more, may produce less. So he's taking a risk. So that's as if he was kone those payrolls. That's as if he bought those payrolls, not like an investment that's ribis. Umandi Amar, not like a loan that's ribis. Umandi Amar, and the other sheet of Rav Kana, Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, who refused to eat from the field, Amar Lach will tell you that no, this is not at all like a steachuza. Steachuza, hekdashi. The reason you could pay a little bit for all the payrolls that you get for steachuza is because it's hekdash. For achmana ukmei apidyon. And the Torah says that through pidyon, it leaves the property of hekdash and it becomes chulin. So even though you're being poded it for a minuscule amount of money, since the Torah is the one that set the amount of money, so therefore you could do it. But hacha halva'ahi mechzik ribis. Over here, it's your own personal agreement. It's not something that the Torah mandated that this is the price and this is what you do. No, it's your own personal agreements, and therefore it's a loan and it's mechzik ribis. If you lend somebody money, you're going to take the field and eat the payrolls from his field, and you're going to be eating more payrolls than you're going to be deducting from the loan. That's ribis, and that's why they refrained from doing it. So now the Gemara, Rav Ashi, teaches us two things that he learned from the people of Masa Mechasya. So I'm Rav Ashi, Amrli Sabi de Masa Mechasya. Rav Ashi says, first thing I learned from the Zakenim of Masa Mechasya. Masa just means a place. Mechasya is the name of the city, and apparently Rav Ashi is from that city. So Stam Mashkanta Shata, that a Stam Mashkon, we assume, is a one-year arrangement. L'may Nafkamina, what does that mean? A Stam Mashkon is a one-year arrangement. I'm giving you my Mashkon, this field is a Mashkon, for only 1 year. Di Achla Shata Matzi Mesalikle, that if the Malva had already had this Mashkon and benefited from this field for 1 year, then the Lova can come up with the money and throw the Malva out of the field as long as he pays up his debt. V'ilo, but if the Malva has not yet had 1 year on the field, lo matzi mesalikle, the Lova is not able to get the Malva off of the Karka by paying up the Chov, and the way Rashi understands, even in a place where the minig is that it's an asra de masalki, that the lova has the right to be masalik the malva, that means that after a year the lova has a right to be masalik the malva, but you got to give the malva some amount of time on that karka. That's the way Rashi understands. The Ritva disagrees, and he says, no, if it's an asra de masalki means as soon as I have the money, as soon as the lova has the money to pay up his debt, he can get his field back. It could be the next day. If he has the money to pay up his debt, he gets his field back. Rav Ashi is talking about an asra de lo misalki, a place where you're not allowed to just come up with the money and get your field back. So what's asra de lo misalki? So we kept giving the example that I gave you a mashkon for 3 years, and I said if I don't pay back within 3 years, then you get to keep this field as a that was given to you as a mashkon. But at the end of 3 years, I'm able to pay back and get my field back. And we said an asra de lo misalki, within 3 years, I can't come up with the money and get my field back. What if I didn't say 3 years? I just said, here's a mashkon, and it's an asra de lo misalki. What is the term of that agreement? What's the understood term of that agreement? So the Ritva says, 1 year, meaning the whole discussion is only within asra de lo misalki, and the understood term of the agreement is 1 year. The Rashba says that Rav Ashi is talking about a case, well, a place where, not an asra de misalki, nor an asra de lo misalki, a place that doesn't have any known minhag, whether it's misalki or not misalki. So we say, oh, okay, so then it becomes, it has a din, not to be misalik until 1 year. So three shitos in Rishonim. Rashi says we're talking about an asra de misalki, that even when you have the right to be misalikim, you only have the right to be misalikim after a year. The Ritva says we're talking about an asra de lo misalki, and what's the understood term on lo misalki is 1 year. And the Rashba says we're talking about a place that doesn't have a minug. So when you don't have a minug, 1 year is the amount of time that you let the malva keep the mashkon, and at that point you can come up with the money and throw him out of the field. Okay, that's one teacher that Rav Ashi brought from Masa Mechasya. Vam Rav Ashi, I'm really sabi de Masa Mechasya. I have another teaching of the elders of Masa Mechasya. My mashkanta, what is the word mashkanta? Why is a collateral called mashkanta? So he says the etymology is deshchuna gabei, that the malda who has this field as a mashkon is considered a neighbor of the field. V'may nafkamina, what halacha is relevant to being a neighbor? Oh, that's a sugya we're going to see later in the Masechta. L'dina, de bar mitzvah, that there's a din, that a person who sells a field and his neighbor has a field that borders that the field that he's selling, and the neighbor is interested in purchasing that field, the neighbor has rights to buy that field before anybody else. And even if somebody else already bought the field, the neighbor can take that field, and the guy will get his money back, and the neighbor, as long as the neighbor is willing to pay, the same price. This is based on the pasuk of Sisa Hayashav HaTov. Person has to do what's right. You're going to get the same price as a seller. You can get the same price from your neighbor or from some stranger. That stranger could buy a field anywhere. The neighbor has certain benefits from having multiple properties that are adjacent to each other, and therefore it's a din of din of bar metzra. So what does that have to do with us? So the Rush is medayik from Rashi that what the application over here is that the malva who takes this field as a mashkon is considered one of the neighbors in that he has the right to buy this field before anybody else because he has a relationship with this field. So since he has a relationship with this field, don't go selling this field. The lovish not go selling this field to somebody else. The malv already has some relationship with this field, so it's like he's a neighbor. He's not really a neighbor because he doesn't own any of the adjacent properties, so he's not really a bar metzra, but that also would be yashav etov. The Ramban says not that way. He says, no, he's not one of the balei ametzar. He can't prevent the bala sada from selling it to whoever it is that he wants to sell it. And certainly if someone else already bought it, certainly if one of the balei ametzar actually bought it. What if the lova wanted to sell it to someone who's an actual neighbor? So what, the malva is going to say, I'm a neighbor? No, you're not. You don't actually own any of the properties around it. No, we're just trying to say that if the bala sada sells the field to the malva, then there's no din of the bar metzra against him. Then the actual Bali Meitzar can't claim Dina de Bar Metzra. Meaning if the Malva had this field as a mashkon and he says, look, I'm really enjoying this, I'm really liking this field, and then he agrees to buy it from the Lova, so the Bali Meitzar cannot come and claim, well, we're the neighbors. No, he's been already in this field, so he does have a relationship. It's not coming out of left field. It's not coming out of, right, it's not something that's coming out of nowhere. He is, he's considered to be a Meitzar. Okay. Amar Rava, Lesuch Zalo Kitarshi Papunoi, Velokishtari Machuznai, Velokachakiri Nirshai. He says, I got three things that I don't like, three things that the Allah is not like, three business practices. So what are these three business practices that he does not like? So Kitarshi Papunai, that means Kitarshi Drav Papa. This is what we already learned about, that Rav Papa was a beer brewer, and what he would do is he would sell beer during Tishrei on credit. So people would not have to pay the money in Tishrei, and he would only collect in Nisan. The thing is, he would charge Nisan prices, and Nisan prices were higher prices than Tishrei prices. So for the amount of beer that he was selling them, selling in Tishrei and demanding payment in Tishrei, he would have demanded $1,000, but for that same amount of beer in Nisan, it would be $1,500. He'd provide the beer in Tishrei, he'd sell the beer in Tishrei, and he'd say, you know what, you don't have to pay me until Nisan, but when you pay me in Nisan, you got to pay me $1,500. And he did not think that this was a problem of ribis, because he has no benefit by giving that extension until Nisan, because he was a rich man. He didn't need the cash anyway. He didn't need the money anyway. So if it was up to him, he would have just held on to the beer anyway until Nisan, and then sold it then for the $1,500 that he's going to get. The only reason he's selling it right now is because these people have a demand for it. These people want it. Okay, I'm happy to provide early delivery, and but you know, that's no problem for me. So from my perspective, it's no ribbis. But mitzad the lukuchos, the fact that they're paying a higher price because they're buying it later, because they're paying later for what they're buying now. Meaning if they had the cash right now, they wouldn't buy from Rav Papa. They would buy from someone who's going to pay them at Tishrei's values. They'll buy it for $1,000 from somebody else. Elamai, they don't have the cash now. So having that extension and having to pay a premium for that extension from their perspective is ribbis. So that's why we don't like this practice, even though from a Rav Papa perspective, it's not ribbis. So that's the one thing he doesn't like. The other thing that Rav says we don't paskin like is shtari machuz na'i. So he's talking about the shtaros that they were knowing to have in the city of Machuza, that the people of Machuza would buy merchandise and they would give it to merchants as an iska, meaning that these merchants would go and would try to sell it, and then they would divide the profits. So that's really technically mutter. But zakvi le ravcha akarna v'kasvi le bishtara, they would already make a cheshbon in advance how much profits should be gained from this merchandise, and they would add half of the profits into the keren of what you owe me. Meaning, I'm selling you merchandise for you to go and resell and make money off of, but I'm already cheshbening that I expect you to make $10,000 of profit off of this. So instead of saying, I'm selling you $5,000 of merchandise, and then I expect back an additional $5,000 of profits, we put in the original shtar, you owe me $10,000 for this merchandise. So that they don't like, because miyemer davaravcha, we don't know that there's going to be profit, and therefore we have to be choshesh, maybe there's not going to be a profit, and the malva is going to collect the entire amount of money. So it turns out that he's taking ribbis, that because I lent this stuff to you, so that's why I'm going to get money back, and that's going to be a problem of ribbis. So I'm like, Mar Bar Meimer said to Ravashi, ooh, that's a problem? What do you mean? Abba Avid Hachi, my father was a Meimar, and he did this. He did like the people in Machuza. He would write a shtar chov for the entire value of the keren, plus the revach, plus the profits, and he was not worried that maybe there's not going to be a profit, and by taking it, it's going to be ribbis, because with Chiyasu L'Kamei, if they would ever come back and report that there was no profit, so Mamalu, he would believe them. He would believe the merchants, and he wouldn't collect. So it was never an issue. It was never going to be a concern that they wouldn't make any profits, and they're going to pay him for the profits that were never realized, which would be a violation of ribbis, because if they said we didn't make any profits, he took them at their word, and that was it, and that was the end of the discussion. So that's why he allowed for such an arrangement, and he himself engaged in such an arrangement. So Amalei, Ravashi said to Hamemar's son, so a wonderful arrangement for your father to make as long as he's alive. But what if he were to die and then the Yisomim were to have these shtaros that say that this guy owes them the initial price of the merchandise plus $5,000 of profits? Are they going to know that they're not really entitled to that unless the profits were actually realized? So it's very risky. He might die and then the Yisomim are going to collect what would otherwise be ribbis. This was like when an officer issues a command, shogeg, by accident he says something and all the people who work for him heard him say it, so they immediately go and carry out the command, even though he didn't mean it as a command. It's like you're describing to someone, oh, I have this great new toy in my house, it's called Alexa, it does amazing things. You say, hey Alexa, play this song, and then all of a sudden Alexa plays the song, you weren't even talking to it, it's just you said it, and then it happens automatically, because your words make something happen. You were just having a conversation. So that's what we say, kishkaga yotzi milfnei hashalit, that a person says something negative, tzadik goes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekayim, you say that your father might die, and then the father goes out and he dies. Nach nafshei da meimar. Meimar died from that. This is the part of one of the many mar makomos that the Rashba quotes in an important tshuva. The Rashba in tshuva sarashba in chelik aleph, simin tav ches, he says that this is one of those things that we can't really explain, that there's no scientific explanation for it, but we believe that there is a power to words, and there are many, many Mamari Chazal that carry that out, that Bris Krusalus Vasayim Chazal say that there's a covenant with your lips. We say Birchas Hedyot Alte Kalabeinech and Kilas Hedyot Alte Kalabeinech, that if someone curses you or blesses you, that should be considered something that's significant. So he says, naturally there's no explaining it, but it just is. It's built into the Bria. It's just the way it is. And he says the Raya from the Pasuk, Kimat Kistoma Yinu, and the next words are Shimuna Kitsine Shimu Kitsine Sodom. So you see that as soon as you say it, it becomes it. So that's something that the Akronim were very sensitive to. That in fact, in Tamei HaMenhagim, he quotes from the Bnei Yisaskar that when you're saying something about somebody that was not healthy, you shouldn't say it Peloshna Kodesh. You should say it in Yiddish or something, even because of Bris Krusel and Sosayim. So you say that a person is sick, it's going to strengthen his illness. Now, some people have the practice that they think you got to keep all illnesses a secret, because if you keep it a secret, then it's not going to be out there, and it's not going to be not so clear that that's the best practice. Because Adrabah, you want people to know to daven for the person who is ill. But there is this concept of not saying things that you don't want to be true. Okay, so now the Gemara explains The third practice that Rava had a problem with. Chakiri Narsha'i. What minag was he referring to from this town of Neresh or Narash, where they would the practice was that they would lend money to poor people and they would take their fields back as a mashkon, and then the malvim would go and would hire the lova as a farmer to work the field, and the malva would collect some of the money from the field. So Dekasvi Hachi Mashkin Le Planya Ari Le Planya, that Ploni the Lova gave his karka as a mashkon to Ploni the Malva, Vahadr Chak Remine, and then the Lova would go and he would be the worker that would work on the field with a typical Chakirus arrangement where you give some amount of the profits to the Malva. Same as Kanem, meaning when the Malva has the field as a mashkon, he could work on the field and he can use the field. So from his perspective, why do I have to do the work? I would hire someone to do the work for me. So Mali, if I hire some strange random farmer, I hire the Lova who gave me the field. Same as Kana Dakni Nale, but people looking at this will say, it's not even the Malva's field. How can the Malva be makne it to the Lova? He was never coming to the field at all. It's the Lova's field. So it looks like he's taking ribis ktsutsa from the Lova, that he lent the Lova money, and now he's getting back something extra for lending the Lova money. For Idna the Kakas, but now that the practice is that they write in the shtar, kanina mine v'shehina kami yidoni, that the malva acquired the field from the lova and he's had it for X number of years and he worked in it and he ate the peiros, and by eating the peiros it's deducting from the amount of the chov, v'hadar chakara, and only afterwards he gives it back to the lova to work on it as the farmhand on the field. Kadesh l'tinu dos b'nei lova in shaper dami. We allow that because we don't want to prevent people from lending money, v'lav milsi. But says the Gemara, that's not true. Even if the field was by the malva for several years first, if he goes and he gives it back to the lova, he hires the lova as the farmer on that field, we're still nervous that that looks like ribis, because he seems to be pretty guaranteed that he's going to get back more than he actually loaned to the lova, and that's not the same as him working on the field himself, because sometimes the expenses in doing so are going to yield a loss and not a gain. So it's not a guarantee. Whereas when you hire the lova back, there's much more of a guarantee of profits, and that's going to be something that looks like ribis. Okay, so that ends the discussion of a field that's given as a mashkon. So now with this mishnah, we move on to a new discussion. So we move on to the discussion of an iska. An iska is that a person gives money to somebody, gives some capital, gives an investment in order that the person will invest it and will start a business and will profit from it. And the person who's providing the capital and the person who's doing all the work will split the profits. Now, if all of the achrayus of the money was on the person who's doing the work, was on the person who's starting the business, so that's a halva'a, right? So if I'm borrowing money to start a business, so I'm borrowing $1 million to start a business, and I have to pay you back half of the profits. So I'm borrowing money and I'm giving you back half of the profits, that's mamish ribbis. So that's alva gemura. That obviously is going to be usher to take any amount of the profits, because that's ribbis. But if all the achrayus of the mammon was on the bala mammon, if all the achrayus of the money was on the person providing the capital, then it's considered a pikadon. Well, then no one's ever going to want to do that, because I don't want to take the risk that you're going to lose all my money. I'm going to give you $1 million and I may not see a penny of it because you might lose all of it. So I'm taking all the risk. No one is ever going to want to do that. So the Chamor Mesakin, we're going to see much later in the Mesakta, that every Iska should be a Machtzis Halva'a and Machtzis Pikadon. So half of the Achrayus is on the person who's doing the work, and half of the profits will go to that person, and half of the Achrayus of the loss and the profits will go to the person who's providing the capital, will go to the investor. But even that, it's still a Chashash Ribbis. Why? Because it turns out that the guy who's doing the work for half of the profits is doing work on the other half of the money for free. Meaning, I'm taking the money that's your half of the money, and I'm doing all that work for free. So you have to pay me something as a worker, some sort of salary to work with your money. So the half of the money that I'm taking responsibility for, fine, that's my money. The half of the money you're taking responsibility for, and and that you're going to get the profits from, so pay me to deal with your money for you to get the profits for that. So the Mishnah just has many permutations of saying that same thing over and over again. A person should not give payrolls to a chenveni as an iska almanas, that the chenveni is going to sell them a little bit at a time, and then after he sells all the payrolls, he'll pay for the payrolls and he'll give half of the profits, or half of the losses will be passed on to the other fellow, because it's a half halva'a and it's a half pikadon. So the chenveni is dealing with the half that belongs to the guy who's providing the capital for free. And lo yitin ma'os likach ben peiros ma'aschar, you also shouldn't do that with cash. Elim kein nosin loscharu kapoel. You at least have to pay the guy like a poel. So if you give him a salary to do this, so then it's fine. Then you avoided all ribbis problems. Similarly, ein moshivin tarnagolin lemechza. Person shouldn't give eggs to his friend almanas that his tarnagolas is going to sit on those eggs and they'll be able to hatch and they'll be able to grow birds, and they assess the value of those eggs at the time that they're given to him, and after they grow efrochim, they'll split the profits of the difference in the price between eggs and efrochim, because since he's the makabel is accepting the achrayus of half of the value of the eggs if they get ruined, or if the efrochim die, so half of the value of the eggs is a halva'a, and he's being tareach and megadel for the other guy because he's so appreciative of the halva, and that's like ribbis. Similarly, you don't give someone baby animals for him to raise, also with the same arrangement of mechza, that half of the risk and half of the profits are going to go to each party, because I view half of what you give me as a loan, and that's why I'm willing to work for your half for free. So that's ribbis. You have to give him some wages for what he's doing, umizono, and also the money for the food that he's going to have to feed these animals in the meantime. Aval mekabel agolin usiachin lemechza. You can be mekabel agolin usiachin. So you can't be shamin agolin usiachin lemechza, but you can be mekabel agolin usiachin lemechza, which means that if we do not assess the value of the agolin, the value of these baby animals at the time that you give them, because the person who's being megadol them is not being mekabel any achrayas on it. If they die, he's not going to pay anything, and if they live, they're going to split whatever profits they have from them, and that's not considered a chashash ribbis, because since the megadol is not being mekabel any achrayas, there's no halva'a. He's just dealing with your animals. So that's perfectly fine. That's his wages for dealing with your animals. There's no halva'a to begin with. If there's no halva'a to begin with, then that's not going to be a problem. Umegadlino son, achu mishlosh. Now the Mishnah says something totally parenthetical. Whenever you have an arrangement where you're supposed to be megadol behemos, so how long do we assume that arrangement is meant to last for? Right? How long do we expect you to be megadol these behemos for? So it's achu mishlosh. Until they get to one third of their growth, one third the size of a full growth of a shor, that's when the meat becomes good, and that's when you've done your job. The chamar ad shetei toenes, and the chamar you're supposed to raise it until it becomes a chamar that's able to actually schlep a burden for somebody, to be useful for somebody. So that's what you're mekabel to do. That's the term of the agreement. So now says the Gemara, we said that you have to when you do a mechza. Where a mechza mechza, you do half as an iska, half as a halva'a. So we said you have to pay the guy a salary for dealing with your half. So Tana kepoel batel. The Brisa says, what do you pay him? You have to pay him like a poel batel. How much a person would be willing to take not to go to work that day? Meaning, if he would go to work that day, he'd make a good amount of money. If he doesn't go to work that day, he doesn't have to work. So how much would he be willing to take not to go to work that day? It's not his full salary, because he's willing to work for his full salary. So my kepoel batel. What do you mean kepoel batel? Why only kepoel batel? He's not batel. He has to be tareach. He has to bring the payrolls and to the store and to sell it and to receive the money and to measure out it, whatever a salesman has to do. So Amar Abayi says, no, we're misunderstanding. Kepol batel shalos melacha de batel mina. The price doesn't mean that you only pay him like a pol batel legamri, as if he's doing nothing. No, of course you pay him for the work that he's doing. The price is just saying that if this is a person who normally does very difficult, heavy labor, and he normally gets paid handsomely for for that labor, so you don't have to pay him whatever he would have gotten had he been doing his normal job. No, you would take whatever a person who normally does a much harder job would be willing to take in order not to do that hard job and to do this much easier job of being a chenveni. Being a storekeeper is an easier job than what this guy is accustomed to. So that's what you have to pay him. So the Gemara says, why does the Mishnah have to tell me two different cases? We said, oh, you give him payros to go and sell, or you give him money to go and invest. Why do I need to be told both of those cases? Utsricha. We need both cases in the Mishnah. Dita nechenveni, if it only would have told me about giving him payros to go and sell, chenveni, who decided like a pala batel, I would think that's where you could pay him like a pala batel, and that's good enough. Mishum delo nafish tirche, because how much of a tircha does he have to just sell the produce? Aval ma'os, likach ben payros, but if you're giving him money to then go and make the investment, to buy the payros and to resell it, de nafish tirche, that's going to be much more of a tircha. I might think you have to pay him more than a poel batel would get paid. It has to be a more reasonable salary. And if it only would have told me that I give the guy the money as the investment, I would think only there do I need to pay him as much as a poel batel, because he's working so hard. But if he's just a chenveni, where it's not going to, I'm giving him the produce, all he's got to do is open up a shop and, you know, and sell it to people, not so much tircha. I might think you don't even need to pay him kapol batel. You could just give him mashu. Think if I invite him over for a drink, that's good enough, and I give him something. So tricha. That's why it has to tell me both cases, to tell me that you got to pay him like a kapol batel in both cases. So now we have four different prices that each record a machlokas, and it all goes back to how much you have to pay the guy. So the first price is pretty direct. How much money do you have to pay for the guy who's going to be who you're investing in? So bein meruba bein muat, whether it's a lot or whether it's a little, divra meir, meaning it's fine. It's as long as you pay him something, it doesn't matter how much. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afil lo tavli mele b'tzir loch li mele grogrosach zeu scharo. Invite him over for a drink. Have him have a single dried fig with you, and that's good enough. You've already paid him. Rabbi Shimon Yechai Omer, nosin lo scharo mishalem. Then no, you need to pay him a reasonable salary. What he means by that is poel batel. They have to pay him like a poel batel, as we've been assuming up until this point in time. So it's actually a three-way machlokas. Now the Gemara says a second brisa. Tanu Rabbanan, ain shaman. You cannot make give a shepherd with an estimated value of the animals if it's not osava ochel, meaning if it's not something that's going to do malacha and you're going to benefit from that malacha lemechsa almanas, that you're going to split the profits unless you give him some sort of salary. Meaning basically just repeating the halacha in our Mishnah that if you have this kind of arrangement with him, you need to give him a salary for your half. But if it's something that is going to produce, the animal itself is going to produce, meaning payrolls don't produce, you sell them and you get the money, so it's all about the profits. But if you're raising an animal, so yeah, the animal is going to go up in value, but in the meantime, it's also going to provide me something. It's also going to produce milk, it's going to produce wool, it's going to produce something. So then Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer, Shaman Esi'izim, you could do such an evaluation of goats, even though they don't do malacha, but Mipnei Shecholvos, because they do provide milk. And that milk that I get to keep, that could be my salary. And sheep, because they produce some amount of wool. And that's tarnagolas, mneshi osavachelas. And a tarnagolas will produce eggs. So that could be the salary that the fellow is being paid. So from the price itself, the Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is disagreeing with the Tanakama. The Tanakama holds that even though the shepherd is getting the milk and the shearings of these, it's still not enough of a wage that he's getting. The Tanakama doesn't hold that it's good enough, that he's getting paid something, he's getting the wool, he's getting the... So it says, Mar, b'giza v'chalav kuliyam lo pligi. Now that, of course, would be enough. Ki pligi b'nisyuve v'sosri. He's not getting all of the chalav. He's getting the leftover whey from the milk, or the wool that just comes off on its own when you're schlepping the animal around, but not the real shearings of wool. V'tanakam, sav'lach rabishim b'nichay, da'amar nosan l'schar mishalim. Tanakam, Tama holds, like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, who says that he needs to be paid a reasonable salary. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Sabla Kavua, and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Yehuda, Damar Afilu Lo Tavlimo El Batzir Lo Achlimo El Grogros Achas Zeu Scharo, that it doesn't need to be a reasonable salary. It could be a little nothing that you give him, and that's his schar. Third brisa, Tan Rabban Maskeres Yishul Chaver to Tarnagolus B'Shnei Afrochin. A woman who has a Tarnagolus could tell a friend who has Beitzim, give me your Beitzim, and I will have my Tarnagolus sit on them, and I'll be matriach in the Afrochim, and I'll take two Afrochim per year. So Yisha Shamar LeChaverta, a woman who says to her friend, let's go be mishtatef Tarnagolus Shaliu Beitzim Shalichi, that the Tarnagolus is mine, and you'll and your eggs, so my Tarnagolus will sit on your eggs. Vani va'at nachlok be'Afrochim, and then we'll split the Afrochim. Rabbi Yehuda Mater, Rabbi Yehuda says that's mutter, and you don't have to worry that maybe the balas haTarnagolus is tareach in half of the pikadon for the schar of the alvav. Rabbi Shimon Oser, and Rabbi Shimon says no, it's us. It's like any other iska. You got to pay a salary. So Rabbi Yehuda lo bayi schar amalam zano. What do you mean? Rabbi Yehuda's against our whole mishnah. You got to pay a salary to the person. So it says Mar ika beitzim uzaros. There are some beitzim that are not ro'i to actually grow into an efroch, and that's going to belong all to the balas haTarnagolus, and that's going to be enough of a payment for that person. So what they're really arguing about is how high a salary does it in fact have to be. So we didn't quite get to the fourth price, but as from tomorrow we'll pick up with the fourth price that also relates back to this machlokas. Okay, have a great day.